Hi, folks. It's Sam Cedar here. I just wanted to give you a heads up. The first 6 minutes of the sound today on the program are not so great. They're bad. It's bad. It's bad audio, but you can hear it. And the rest of the segment with Cliff wouldn't make sense if I didn't include it. So here it is. It's about minute six into the podcast. Well, now I guess it would be about minute 6:30. and enjoy. Sorry, we're on the road today. What are you going to do?
Is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat, the Majority Report, with Sam Cedar.
Subject so that they can become, you know, kind of give you more access in the future. man, not by himself, although, you know, these things come back around. Now, John Brownstein wrote something that was really interesting. He essentially wrote that President Obama has plenty of options to rock the economy. He's just got to fight for them. That was the title of his piece. Now, that's a little bit surprising, isn't it? Exactly, and you know, the funny thing about Brownstein's piece is, at the end of the piece, he talks about there are three hurdles to President Obama fixing the economy. Myths about these hurdles. First off, that the government has no more job creation products is simply false. Iron costs are low, but we offer the federal government products are cheap. In other words, virtually every economic indicator is crying out for more fiscal stimulus. And then he says, President Obama's second obstacle, disbelief that government can help on the jobs front amongst the population.
And then he says, the third obstacle is that roadblock number three, convincing Congress and congressional conservatives to sign a jobs bill. He says, in the end, that the fact is he can't. But neither can he let that reality dictate his path. Instead, he should develop a tightly focused resident jobs agenda, which he presents to America as the way forward from now through the election and beyond. He should tell people that he's put the debt ceiling, the budget deficit, baselines, and credit ratings behind him. He knows what families care about right now, their jobs, their paychecks, their living standards. But Congress will block him, you say. On most of those ideas, probably so, though I put the renewal of the payroll tax at above 50% and the unemployment insurance extension only slightly below half. As for the rest of the plan, if Obama gets fired up around an agenda, anything like the one I've outlined, if he's very clear about who precisely is standing between America and that jobs agenda, he will not only regain his footing and provide a stark contrast between himself and his opponents, but his fierce advocacy will give the country something to feel good about. This is what Drew Weston was arguing 3 weeks ago.
Say the last part again, Sam. I'm sorry.
He said, essentially, that even though he won't be able to get this stuff through, he will be able to fire up the country and get reelected.
Yeah. Well, no, I just didn't. You said something about 3 weeks ago, but I didn't hear what.
Well, no, that was what Drew Weston wrote 3 weeks ago.
Oh, yes, that was. No, and Drew Weston had that piece, and I think he's been writing stuff that's been similar to this now for, Drew has been, for 2 years, you know, ever since this all started. And again, I mean, the kind of what Jared Bernstein's talking about there to me is again, the problem that we've had, and it's what we continue to have, is that it doesn't, you know, the president doesn't seem to stand up and say, here's my line in the sand, fight for things, and of course say, here's what needs to be done, and then even really just take the executive powers are not few, there are many. And he's used them when he's wanted to use them for a variety of things. I mean, you know, I'm not going to claim to be a constitutional expert, and quite frankly, I'm sure, we know that the last two presidents have done some things that, quite frankly, have gone beyond their constitutional mandate and what they're allowed to do, and I'm not advocating even that. But I'm sure there's plenty of smaller things that he can do, as well as standing up for a broader bill and putting together maybe a very clean, tight sort of jobs bill that's very clear what he's trying to do. But I don't get any of this stuff. Again, you and I have had these conversations. And when I read, you know, I don't know Jonathan Alter personally. I know Ezra. I like him. I happen to disagree with his analysis of things a lot. And this one I thought was one of his worst I've come across. Because, I mean, to honestly sit there and look at that, and what did President Obama and ask the question of, you don't see how what he could have done any differently. I mean, I then start to wonder if I'm inhabiting the same world. To me, there's again to not understand culture dynamics, to understand that if the Tea Party was born out of frustration with a health care bill that should have been passed off to a gang of six to sit and dawdle over forever and do nothing on. So it went that whole summer and nothing happened, and stimulus that that was big enough to say to people, wow, we're spending a lot of money, but not big enough to actually get it done, you know? And in Jonathan Alter's piece, you know, I mean, how someone who's been in Washington for as long as he has can sit there and be so obtuse about this, how he needed the 3 Republican votes. You know, George Bush came in. I mean, I think it's often instructive to compare the stimulus to the tax cut Bush got when he came in. Because Bush wanted, in the end, got a $1.35 trillion tax cut, and that's about the size of the stimulus that most of the economists who knew what they were talking about said we needed. George Bush, as you may remember, not only didn't win the election, not only didn't win Florida, but only had 50 senators on his side. You know, and had Jim Jeffords about to bolt. And yet found a way to get through that tax cut. He went to people, he still had a presidential honeymoon, you know, because he was the new president. He went into people's states, you know, whether it was, you know, was it Gene Shanahan and Max Cleland and Mary Landrieu and others that had won in more conservative states. You know, if you look at what Obama, the approval rating was after he won, the huge email list he had, the fact that he, you know, he was obviously was more popular in states, in most of these states he had won, than their home senators were. Like, he couldn't have gone to Maine at that time and told people, we just had a huge economic crash, it was caused by Republicans, and, you know, and I mean, really threatened to do this and say, and put the blame squarely with Collins and Snow. Same thing with Specter in Pennsylvania. Hell, he could have, he won one of the districts, the congressional districts in Nebraska, because they split it up by congressional district there, the electoral vote. He could have pressured Ben Nelson, not to mention with withholding Democratic Party funds. I mean, sorry, there's a little background noise here for my truck. Point being, he could have gone and pressured the people that need to be pressured. He won Indiana. He could have pressured Dick Lugar and Evan Bayh. He won Ohio. He could have pressured George Voinovich. He won Florida. He could have pressured Mel Martinez. You know, to act like, political reality said he only had 58, and that's, you know, or 59, and that's all he could do, is ridiculous.
Yeah, you know,
everybody has watched this stuff happen before.
I you know, absolutely. And, you know, this is the thing, you know, as I read Alter's piece, which is, you know, you think Obama's been a bad president? Prove it. And he's saying this to the left, the center, the right. Well, you know, I think the criticism from the left is that he has been not necessarily a bad president. It's either he's been a bad president if he had if his agenda was different than this, and he's been a bad president from a progressive standpoint if this was his agenda all along. But this is what he says from the left. He's doing us the favor of presenting our complaint with Obama. He should have pushed for a much bigger stimulus in 2009. That's the view of New York Times columnist Paul Krugman. Alter writes, now gospel among liberals. It was gospel then too, actually. It's true economically. And remember, Paul Krugman not just said now that he should have pushed for a bigger stimulus. At the time, he said he should push for a bigger stimulus. And not only did he say he should push for a bigger stimulus because of the need for it on a policy level, he said, my fear is, I mean, I specifically remember him writing this. My fear is he's going to ask for too little, it's not going to be effective, and he's not going to be able to come back to Congress either because of the 2010 election or because people are going to say it didn't work the first time. And that's exactly the predicament.
That's right.
That's exactly the predicament we're in.
Yeah.
And so...
Right. And that's... Yeah.
And so... Alter's is saying it was, you know, the classic case. It was impossible from the political standpoint to ask for more. Here's the problem with people like Ezra's piece, you know, the rating Obama, whatever it was, and Jonathan Alter's piece, is that for them... And Alter really should know better, because he's certainly not the policy wonk that Ezra is, with all due respect. For them, politics is like the politics you would see amongst the faculty at a college or a university, as opposed to, you know, where the politics simply are how the different players act upon each other, and they have no constituencies in which to draw upon. As opposed to in politics, we see in Washington, there is another player involved in this, and that is the people, and that's what your point is. You can go to these people's constituency and put pressure on them. This is something that President Obama never did, and this is either because he got the agenda that he wanted, or because he was incompetent as a politician. And it doesn't matter what the answer is to that. And this is not about, I guess in my mind, this is not about bashing Obama at this point. This is also bashing the centrist and technocratic and beltway media that enables this type of leadership, that is supposedly identified with the left.
Right. I mean, I would say, you know, there's a sort of sleight of hand in Alter's piece, and that he, you know, he spends all this time saying prove it, and he says, but then he ends by saying, how would Mitt Romney and others, you know, be any better? And on that, of course, I agree with him. You know, I mean,
right.
I'm not sitting here saying, it would have been much better if Rick Perry had been president. That definitely would have solved it all. So if that's his whole, the whole argument is, if in the end he makes this three-quarters or four-fifths of his piece is one thing, and in the end is, well, how would it have been any better with these guys? Well, if that's just the argument, then he could have written that in two sentences. Obama's not very good, but he's better than the other dudes who are running against him right now. But I mean, if the point here is to have an argument about what could have been done differently. I mean, look, there's a number of things that he can do unilaterally. He could have done certain things of housing policy unilaterally. The 14th Amendment and the debt ceiling he could have done unilaterally. There's a whole lot of things. Recess appointments of Don Johnson and others he could have done unilaterally, and judges that haven't been filled. These are things he just has chosen not to do. And so, I mean, if Jonathan Alter wants me to put together a list, I'll put together a dissertation. He wants me to prove it? I could prove it pretty easily. It's not all that tough. You know, counterfactual history, at least, is a little bit tougher to say what would have happened had he done these things. But I think the best comparison that I can make is the one I've made to another president who came in having barely lost the popular vote with only 50 senators to his name and needed a similar amount of money for his top priority and went out and barnstormed and fought for it and got it. Versus, you know, and that president, you know, came in during a time that wasn't an economic, you know, disaster where people were looking for almost anything different, which this one had. That president didn't have a 13 million member email list. That president didn't win, what, almost close to 375 or something electoral votes. You know, I mean, the list of advantages that Obama had coming in, I mean, granted, there's a much more ruthless right wing, we know that, than there is on the, you know, and there's the centrist, you know, gobbledygook that tried to convince you not to do these things in Washington, but it doesn't change the fact that you know, there's a lot that could have been done had this, you know, had President Obama gone to his supporters, gone to his email list, gone to blogs, gone to progressive television, radio personalities and others and said, help me fight for this and let's push this. You know, I just think, I mean, you know, of course a lot would have been done differently. And if successful economic measures that people would have felt a direct impact from had been passed, if measures to immediately reform the healthcare system. Remember, also, we could have, if he'd gone to his guy and said, we're passing the healthcare bill with the public option through reconciliation, and he threatened people with money, you would have gotten the 50 votes you needed there.
But, you know, let's...
Sorry, they were there.
But more, you know, more important than this, because, you know, I think we both know at this stage, you know, because clearly there's not going to be a serious primary challenge to Obama now, and I don't know, maybe Huntsman is going to run as an independent, which I think would be a problem, frankly, for Obama to a certain extent. Maybe not, but he would take
I think those independents that he's trying to court would go to Huntsman.
Yeah, I mean, it's a question of whether or not, I think he, on, you know, in a vacuum, he presents a challenge to Obama. I think the question is, could he actually get a campaign up that would have any, that would make any measurable difference? But yes, he would take votes from Obama. There's no doubt about that. And, so the real question is at this point, okay, leave aside the past. You have Jared Bernstein telling him, at the very least, fight for these plans. Make it clear that there are things that government can do now. Stop talking about deficits. Stop talking about the debt. Make at least a rhetorical pivot. make a strong, you know, put together a plan that, in the, you know, if you didn't have all these restrictions, would work. I mean, Jared Bernstein is almost giving him political advice at this point. And frankly, you know, I just don't understand how, if there is a sense that, you know, and certainly amongst the alt-rights and the Ezra Kleinites, there is a sense that President Obama really can't do anything different than he's doing now. And certainly now he wouldn't be able to do anything because of the Republican Congress. Okay, fine. Then why is he not fighting this on a political level? Why is he ceding all of this rhetorical space to the Republicans? Because the rhetorical space that he is ceding now is essentially will sprout. It will sprout the policies that will kill us in 15 years, or 10 years, or 5 years, or 2 years.
Well, it's accepting this mentality that lowering deficits in the end, that you know, let's fight the deficit, let's take spending out of the economy, and that will create jobs. It's comparing, you know, Paul Krugman's pointed all this out, you know, better than me. So I almost feel like, you know, I mean, I'm just offering what he's offered. But to be comparing this whole silly thing of comparing the economy to a family, you tighten your belts when times get tough, so that's what we should do. I mean, this is stupid. Not only is it just stupid, because it makes no sense in any, you know, to compare a family to the U.S. economy, but it's just accepting right-wing framing.
Right.
It's harmful.
All right.
You know, and it's what doesn't allow for another stimulus, because people say, well, God, if we spend more money, we're going to hurt the economy more. I mean, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, President Nixon was saying, we're all Keynesians now, and now we've got a Democratic president discrediting Keynesianism. You know, and I mean, the last thing I'm going to say on this is honestly, if the whole argument is, what can you do differently? You don't have the votes, you know, well, then I guess it's amazing how LBJ didn't get that civil rights bill passed. I mean, he didn't have the votes, right? Oh, that's right. He went and he fought for it. And he convinced some Republicans to vote for it. I mean, you know, he pressured people. That's what you do. I just get so sick of seeing these arguments that literally, and they're written by people like, didn't Alter write a history book on FDR?
Right.
I mean, are you kidding me? You know, have you not seen this before? I don't know him, and I mean, I don't want to impugn his character, but it's like, if you're a smarter guy as Alter is, and you've studied as much as he has, and you've written a book on FDR, and you've seen all these things, how can you literally be intellectually honest and write that column? I don't know. That's all I have to say. I mean, his to me was more ridiculous even than what Ezra wrote. And I think what Ezra wrote was wrong-headed too, in a very serious way. But I don't get it. That's all. I'm so tired of seeing these silly arguments that, you know, to me the crowd that says that nothing else could have been done has their head in the sand almost as far as someone who doesn't believe in climate change at this point.
Right. All right, well, let's turn to something.
All history and congressional relations and everything else, and just say nobody else who's had a hostile Congress, nobody else who's had to win over a couple of votes has ever been able to do anything in the history of this country, I guess. So, unless you have huge majorities, then you never get anything done.
Right, unless, which of course would be an argument as to why would we vote, what difference does it make who we vote for president? But it's not the case when it's Republicans. All right, but be that as it may, let's turn for the moment to something more fun, because we only have a couple minutes here. You remember Representative Philip Hinkle. He's that anti-gay marriage Indiana Republican. I don't know if I talked about this story with you or just, but he basically responded to a ad on Craigslist, Casual Encounters. He emails with this man, Cameron Gibson, and the guy is offering his services. His time. Is using his sister's email address. She gets a hold of the thing. I can't tell if she was pimping him or what, but she has this big confrontation with the guy's wife and all and on, and the whole thing blows up, and she sends the emails to the local newspaper, the Indianapolis Star. So it comes out, and Hinkle doesn't deny that it's his email addresses. So this is what, are you ready for this? This is what he says happened. Hinkle admitted that he paid Gibson $80 for a good time, but denied Gibson's allegations that he tried to prevent Gibson from leaving the hotel room, denies that he exposed himself, denied that he tried to pay him off with $100 cash, an iPad, and a BlackBerry to keep quiet. And now, this is what Hinkle says they did. Hinkle said that when Gibson got there, they just talked about baseball and the view. And that when Hinkle came out of the bathroom, because Hinkle had to go to the bathroom, because you know how it is when you talk baseball and the view, you got to take a leak.
Well, the view always excites my bladder.
And
at least in my case.
When he came out of the bathroom, Gibson had stole money, the iPad, and the BlackBerry. And Hinkle said, I went to the edge, but I didn't fall over the edge. I got everything back but the iPad, Hinkle told the Star, and quite frankly, if that makes them feel good, so be it. He noted that he won't be filing a police report. Good for him. Wow, that's very Christian of him to forgive them.
He's so forgiving.
And so...
you know what he did, Sam? He turned the other cheek.
When asked why he arranged the encounter to begin with, Hinkle said, I don't know. I'm telling you, I don't know. And Hinkle went on to say, somewhere upstairs, a button got pushed, and I want to know why. People keep asking, oh, this is what the reporter asked. People keep asking, what were you thinking? Honestly, I don't know. It's that simple, he says. I say that emphatically, Hinkle said. Also, I'm not gay.
Well, I can tell you that, you know, you see these patterns and these things. You see them anyhow, just as a normal human being following politics. But as you know, I used to fancy myself a bit of a Republican sexologist, Sam, when I used to do this.
Oh, I still fancy you that. I still fancy you that. Are you kidding?
Well, I appreciate that. I guess I've branded myself, and that was good branding by me. So, you know, when I used to do this regularly, we had this segment going on the Young Turks probably for about 3 or 4 years. And all this stuff sounds familiar. The, you know, it was either, you know, it was we were talking about baseball or is it deep tissue massage or, you know, they're always, you know, they're willing to admit, it's kind of the admit some but deny the worst parts theory that you can get out of it. Oh, yeah, I went to the hotel room, we exchanged pants, but we didn't touch each other. You know, and it's always the guys, again, it reminds me of good old Ed Schrock, representative of Virginia, who was co-sponsoring the defense of the gay marriage amendment, who they found calling in to gay sex phone lines, and had to suddenly resign. And it reminds me, of course, of Larry Craig, and reminds me of more recently, the guy with the, what was it, one of those, was it the Family Research? I get them all mixed up because they all have such stupid, you know, they just fit the word family in there. But the guy that had the rent boy,
mm-hmm.
who carried his luggage around Europe, you know, because he'd torn a rotator cuff.
Oh, of course.
He didn't say how he torn that rotator cuff, of course. But you know, he'd done that, so he needed a really hot young guy to carry around luggage for him as he was going and testifying in different states for why gay marriage and gay benefits for gay couples, other things should be denied. I mean, you see these patterns, they just start to emerge, you know. There's a Da Vinci Code to these guys. And it's amazing, you know, who sponsor the discriminatory legislation, and yet, and they're, you know, literally do things almost to try and get caught. Public bathrooms, Craigslist.
Yeah, why is Hinkle using his actual email address? He used his real email address. I mean, you know, that it's clearly like one of these things where, you know, these guys, they've repressed this stuff so much, but it cannot stay repressed. It keeps coming out in creepy ways. That's why they're going to a truck stop, they're doing whatever they're doing, and they desperately want to get caught. And, you know, it would be far sadder if it wasn't for the fact that they take their self-hatred out on others. And so
that's exactly it. I would honestly have compassion and feel sorry for them if it weren't for the fact that they're denying people the needed health benefits and other benefits, you know, just because they can't work out their own psychological issues. And so that's why I have no compassion, and I think they deserve to be ridiculed and exposed to root the last one of them out, because they're hurting people. and they don't get to hurt people because they can't accept who they are.
Cliff Schechter, thank you so much for joining us. I'm sorry about the technical difficulties today.
That's okay, Stan. As long as I get to get on with you and talk about the view and talk baseball, it's always a good week.
Cliff, we'll see you next week. I appreciate it, buddy.
Hey,
thanks,
thanks
always for joining us. Chris, you know that your incessant typing there makes it almost impossible. I was actually playing the sympathetic song. You couldn't hear it, but I was playing the sympathetic version of your intro song, and people could barely hear it because of all your typing. Hey,
I was just sending a very funny tweet. You know, you might see.
Oh, you're breaking up. Let me call you back. Hold on. I'm going to have to call you back. I'm not. Maybe we won't be able to see you. I'm going to call you right back. For some reason, you're breaking up. Of course, I could hear his typing perfectly, but not not his voice.
What is this?
Hey, Sam.
Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm good. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you better. Maybe.
Oh, good.
The system I'm working with probably couldn't handle the pressure of actually having your face on my computer. I am, as you saw briefly, I am. I'm in the.
You're in the bunker.
I'm in the bunker awaiting Hurricane Irene.
Yes, I saw that you have the jars of urine behind you, so that's good. Just in case you need some liquids later.
That's right. I'm saving different specimens of our of humanity, so that in the event that you know we need to come out and start a new civilization, then we'll be able to do that.
Yes. So how's it going? Are you prepared for a hurricane? I mean, you're not really going to get it, are you? Where you are?
No. But you know, we're supposed to go to the Cape.
Well, you're not doing that.
Well, we're debating. Because, you know,
oh, really?
we're coming back, I'm supposed to come back for either Wednesday or Thursday, and
okay.
We could get like a day and a half. We haven't been to the beach in, you know, a long time, and, you know, I guess there's people who live in, you know, the middle of the country, they never get to go to the beach, but, you know, when you grow up on the East Coast, you know, you go to the beach.
Right.
That's the point. And, you know, we keep debating, like, well, okay, there'll be 2 days of a lot of rain and maybe some, you know, 50-mile-an-hour winds. So we stay inside
right,
for that. And then we go out and it'll be pretty afterwards.
And when are you thinking of going?
Tomorrow morning.
Well, that would beat the storm. I mean, you'd get there, you know, before it.
No, it would probably be raining. Yeah, it might. It might be. I don't know. This storm seems to be moving slower than they say it is, which also cuts against it, too, because if it's moving slower, it's going to hang around longer.
Right. It's also not as, so far, not as bad as they said it is.
Oh, really?
Well, it seems like it's going to be, you know, it's a Category 2 now. That means it might be less by the time it comes up.
You don't really know what you're talking about.
I do. I've actually been really reading all this stuff.
I'm sure. I'm sure you spend your time reading this stuff because you certainly don't do it looking into film.
I'm reading it right now.
What did you tell me to watch last week? I couldn't find that Paul anywhere.
Well, I also told you to watch Paradise Lost, but it wasn't on demand, so you kind of had to order it on Netflix.
Yeah, but I don't get the DVDs anymore.
Well, you could.
Yeah, if I want to pay another $8. So you know what? I realize you gave me two movie recommendations that were impossible for me to watch.
Well, I thought Paul was on Amazon. The way I read it, it was on Amazon.
I couldn't find it anywhere.
Well.
So what are we going to do? Just hang out? What do you mean? Well, what?
I got some stuff this week. No, well, I mean, that's too bad, but I got some stuff this week if you want.
Oh, God. This is too painful. Hold on. Hold on for 1 second. I gotta play this version for it.
You do that. I'm gonna type.
No, don't type, because people can hear you type.
Okay.
All right, I'm gonna stop it. Forget it. What? All right. Come on. What are your picks for this week? We should tell people that Chris Rosen is from some website, some blog, movieline.com.
No, it's a very nice, very fun website, movieline.com. You can follow me on Twitter at 42inchTV. I wanted to say, give a shout out before we start to my good friend Balanced Info, who was very excited about me this week.
How sad is it that you have to pick out the one tweeter that is probably you anyways?
It's not me.
It's probably you.
It is not, but he or she was very excited, tweeting from Real America, Sam.
I would. Balanced Info said, like, I really like Majority Report, but I gotta say, I was looking forward to Fridays.
Let me give you your great comeback for the audience, your Beavis and Butthead level humor. Hi, Rosen's mom. After, I loved everything about Majority FM, but I look forward to Rosen's segment most.
There's no doubt. Listen, I would put the chances.
My mother.
I would put the chances of you not having a sock puppet Twitter account at 0%. There's no way that you don't have a fake Twitter account so that you can pump yourself up. And there's no doubt in my mind. Who is that? Is that your girlfriend?
No, please. You can follow her and at worst case.
Yeah, I'm sure she's got a whole series of sock puppets just so that when your sock puppets get found out, somebody else can defend them.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not familiar with this term sock puppet, but I'll take your word.
It's like a fake account.
Oh, right. Okay. A dummy account, you mean?
Well, I think actually 42-inch TV probably is a dummy account.
I didn't set you up for that one.
All right, what have you got?
All right.
So Chris Rosen comes on from MovieLine.com every week to tell me a Netflix streaming movie and an Amazon on-demand movie because I've gotten rid of cable, but apparently that's too difficult for him to do, so he just throws out any movies.
That's not true. Let me ask you a question. When you do Amazon, though, you could also buy on Amazon, right? For like $3 or $2 or whatever it is.
That's what the on-demand is.
Right. Okay. That's good. No, I know. I just want to make sure you weren't limiting me to only free Amazon movies.
You mean for a Prime user?
Yes.
Yeah. I am a Prime user.
Okay.
I wear that, badge with a lot of honor. It's pretty exclusive.
It is very exclusive.
No. It's actually worth it because you don't pay for any shipping.
That's good. So I got a couple of things for you. First one, I want
to... Well, who are you typing to, Chris?
I'm not typing anything.
What makes you think we can't hear that?
I'm not typing, though.
Well, whatever you're doing, put your yogurt down.
Okay. It was a tape recorder.
I put out a podcast. You know that, right? You don't have to tape it.
I have a tape recorder here. Sometimes I just like going through my thing to see how... It's an air check. I like doing an air check.
Go ahead.
Anyway, going to recommend for you Morgan Spurlock documentary, The Greatest Movie Ever Sold. I don't know if you saw
seen it.
Earlier in this
screen. I seen it.
Jesus Christ.
I went to the screening of it. Have you seen it?
Oh, well, yeah.
Did you go to a screening?
No.
So in other words, you, who is the senior movie line editor of movieline.com or whatever.
I don't go to all these screenings.
Did not go to a private screening of this movie, but I not only went to a private screening of this movie, but then interviewed Morgan Spurlock about the movie. And now, 5 months later, you're coming to me and recommending it to me?
Well, I'm also recommending it to your listening audience.
Well, why would you need to do that? I interviewed him and talked about the movie months ago.
I don't listen, Sam.
I did it on a Friday, too. I cannot believe you.
Another thing I want to recommend.
Did you like the movie? Wait. Did you like it? I want to hear your opinion of this movie.
I think it's fun. I like Morgan Spurlock. It's just a little surface, I think. You know, I don't know.
Well,
exactly.
See if you can give me just a slightly more in-depth...
I really can't. I mean, it was fun. It's Morgan Spurlock, so you get what you expect.
You know what, dude? I'm starting to realize that not only do you not have, sort of a wide breadth of knowledge about film, but you're in the bag. Look at you. You're afraid to criticize the movie.
You know, I want people to watch it for themselves.
You are afraid to criticize the movie. Why? Because you're trying to maintain your relationship with him?
No, I don't have a relationship with him. You're the one who interviewed him.
Yeah, but wait, why won't you criticize the movie if you didn't like it that much?
Because I haven't seen it, Sam.
Are you serious? Are you serious?
Yeah.
You gotta be fucking kidding me. What do you do? Are you serious?
Yes.
What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you? There's something mentally wrong with you.
No, that's not nice.
What do you do? You're the senior editor of MovieLine.com. What do you do? I don't understand. You have to explain this to me. What is wrong with you?
I do a lot of work.
What is wrong with you? But it's not like I'm asking you to tell me about something that's not your work. I'm asking you to tell me about your work. But you, like, it's like saying to me, like, you know, it's like I'm not asking you about, hey, well, can you give me the cricket update? I'm asking about movies. You're the senior editor of MovieLine.com. Why? I don't understand. What's wrong with you? What is mentally wrong? There's something severely mentally wrong with you.
You're kind of sound like you're breaking up. Let me just finish off the segment and offer two more recommendations for you.
There's something wrong with you.
I'm still there. Is this still on?
I wanted to give you
two things here quick before we go.
What the fuck is wrong with you?
I know a few months ago you had Doug Benson on and he recommended Unstoppable. I don't know if you remember that. It was a train movie with Denzel Washington.
Yeah.
So it's been on HBO a lot recently, and I must echo his recommendation. Great movie, folks.
Okay. I just hung up on Rosen. I cannot believe that he followed up a review of a movie that he didn't watch that I had interviewed the filmmaker on this program 3 months ago with simply reiterating the review of somebody else who came on to review movies. There's something mentally wrong with that guy. There's something mentally wrong with him. I don't know what to say. I mean, I actually think that there is a chance that having him on this program qualifies me for some type of federal grant. I don't believe it. What a moron. Oh, my God. All right, folks. Wow. All right. So now it is that time of the program where I bring you our songs from David Benjoya and Dan Killian and the whole crew at the Majority Reporter at Screaming Majority. Actually, I think this one is I don't know the details of it. And Matt, you're going to have to, when you post this, you're going to have to include the details in the blog post. Because I look, there's only so many things I can juggle, and I bring on a guy like Rosen, and now I can't even remember anything. Everything in my mind. So this is called 1937, and a great tune. Check it out now.
You know, history will know where we are, like when the economist told FDR that his new deal was getting old, that he had to put a little stimulating on hold. Stop spending, you'll be in heaven. Tonight we're gonna party like it's 1937, a Roosevelt recession, let's try it. Might be Peter Keane, but it's not Keynesian. Take a lesson from history. Now's not the time for austerity. Roosevelt was lucky he had World War II. We're already in five wars. We are screwed. Stop spending and you'll be in heaven. Tonight we're going to party like it's 1937. Roosevelt recession, let's try it again. There might be Peter Keane, but it's not
I love it. That was great. That was great. Great job by the Screaming Majority. And now it is time for Jimmy Reefer Cake's submission. And I gotta say, this week there's a little bit of anger in Jimmy's song this week. He didn't appreciate my comments last week about last week's song, but maybe that's the key, because the Jimmy Reefer Say Cake song this week I think is a 10 out of 10. He bowls a strike. Here it is, folks. Three-legged dog, of course, that is, well, here you go.
Three-legged dog and a two-legged cat on the side of the road having sex. How about that?
This is Jimmy Reefer Cake, you son of a gun. All I do every Friday is hit a home run. Drink eight vodka tonics, ate a bottle of Tums. Criticize my guitar, but don't knock the drums. Governor in Texas, Rick Perry, dumber than W, kind of scary. Tea Party Savior, saving from Bachman, praise the Lord, he has a cock man. Rick Perry says Social Security is a disease. He'd rather keep all them serfs on their knees. So they stay desperate, waiting for the next meal. By the way, when is Reefer Cake's big record deal? Shave that dog and teach to hunt.
There you go. Shave that dog and teach it to hunt. That was Jimmy Reefer Cake's song, and I thought that was pretty awesome, actually. Three-legged dog. There was a couple of knocks at me, and he really wanted me to listen to the lyrics this week, and I did. And so congratulations to Jimmy Reefer Cake. That was fantastic. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it is time for me to leave those of you who are freeloaders and join the members in the better half of the show. Next week on our program, Rick Perlstein. We'll have Chris Hayes, David Bromwich, Dahlia Lithwick, Greg Mitchell, Abe Sauer, David Cross. And that's not even the full week. I think I've only told you through Thursday. There's a slight chance that his plans may change because of Hurricane Irene, in which case I might even be back earlier, because if I can't have fun on vacation, might as well work. But we shall see. And either way, enjoy next week's shows and become a member. Buy your crap through Amazon link. DonateYourAccount.com at majority. DonateYourAccount.com/majority. And JustCoffee.coop. Use the coupon code majority. Get 10% off. See you in the better half.